Hello, I'm Connie Rotella, and welcome to our Triple Threat podcast. I'm super excited to begin this journey with all of you. Are you ready to put your best foot forward and show up with confidence? This tool is here to help you evolve into the artist you are meant to be. Just always remember to believe, become, and be ready. Add a new skill set or refine what you already know. So here we go.
My special guest today is the one and only Travis Knight. He's a tap dancer, performer, choreographer, speaker, believer. That's what I love about him. Travis is realizing his dreams, pounding rhythms on wood floors all over the world, doing what he loves to do. He actually wakes up and does what he loves to do every day of his life. And I can't wait to speak to him because he's worked alongside like Jackie Richardson, Arthur Duncan, Gregory Hines. We know him as the extraordinary tap dancer he is, and he shares all his love. So Travis, thank you so much for being part of the Industry Talk podcast. I'm happy that you're coming straight from Brampton, Toronto.
Yes.
Let's add that in.
But I love it.
I'm happy that you're with us this morning to speak about what you love to do, which is tap dance all over the world and letting people know and educating people about what this is, this form of art.
Well, thank you for having me.
How did you fall in love with tap dance?
I was a very shy child, and I don't think shy is the right word. I was just like afraid. I was afraid of people. I was afraid of everyone. I only really spoke to my immediate family and like maybe one auntie. It was just, I had like this extraordinary fear. And so my world was very small. And my parents being, you know, the wise people that they are, they said, you know what, we're social animals. This is not going to work out for him. So they put me in team sports and, you know, disaster after disaster, you know, hockey, come on, come on. It didn't work out. Baseball was slightly better. But all the while, you know, Michael Jackson's playing in the house, the music videos are popping. Eventually, I see this performance. At the time, Sammy Davis Jr. was really, really ill. He had end-stage cancer. And all of Hollywood came out to pay this man, this amazing entertainer, artist, tribute. I believe Eddie Murphy hosted. Stevie Wonder was on the gig. Michael Jackson was on the gig.
Wow.
Gregory Hines was on the gig. And when Gregory Hines came out and pay tribute to Sammy Davis Jr. Through tap dance. Like I'd seen tap dance before. Like I'd seen like the Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly, but what Gregory was doing was different. And then, so I was already like, oh, this is great. But then magic happened, magic, where this frail man, this frail sick man, Sammy Davis Jr. put on his own tap shoes and walked up on stage. And then they had what I perceived to be a tapathetical conversation on stage. And it was wonderful. They traded back and forth. And then, you know, this frail man turned into a rhythmic god. Like, you know, I'm realizing this now, the older that I get. But you know, when you've been doing something for so long, it's just like breathing. And so when Sammy Davis Jr. walked up on that stage, he was home. You know, it was like the illness just left. And Gregory had a hard time keeping up. It was just like, you know, of course there was deference there. There was reverie there. But at the very end, Sammy Davis Jr. did this lick. That clank, clank, and clicked his heels together. And Gregory didn't know what to do. The audience cheers. They rise to their feet. It's something that they would never, literally never see again. I want to say that I became a tap dancer then, at that point, because then I rented their movie. Yeah, I rented their movie Tap. I said, "Mom, Dad, I need to do this." You know, a lot of people dance, a lot of people tap dance, a lot of people do a bunch of different forms of dance. But then there are the nerds. They're like the nerds for the form, and I became a nerd for the form at that performance. And so that's what I mean by I was a tap dancer at that point. So I feel like. The universe, this is a long story. I apologize, but I can't
abridge it
because it's so weird. It's so weird. The universe conspired for me. Like, I feel like the universe conspires for whoever you are. And at that point, I was a tap dancer. So my mother was ecstatic that finally her son was interested in something. And so, you know, she was talking about it at work. Word of mouth is the best thing. And which is relevant because tap dance is an oral tradition. Maybe we'll come back to that later. But so she's talking at work, and a colleague of hers said, "Oh, you know Ethel Bruno? Well, here's her number. This is where you need to go." Now, Ethel Bruno is from Harlem, New York. She born and raised in Harlem, New York, and she was so close to the entertainment community there that her mother would make meals, like hot meals, for the acts that would perform at the Apollo Theater. And she would send her daughter, Ethel, to go deliver these hot meals to the acts at the Apollo Theater. In exchange, Ethel said, "Hey, for example, hey, Bunny Briggs, a phenomenal tap dancer, can you show me a step?" And so this woman, who's raised in Harlem, New York, who's raised in this New York tradition of the form, specifically raised in the African-American community in Harlem, she moves eventually to Montreal and starts to teach tap dance after her own career as Miss Swing. So that's the woman I met. That woman, Ethel Bruno, is a horrible businesswoman, wonderful woman in terms of a community leader. If you didn't have money, that wasn't an excuse to not learn how to tap dance. We'll figure it out later. But I say horrible businesswoman because she wasn't in the phone book. This is how I'm aging myself. That's fine. But she wasn't in the phone book. You know, she had a business, but she wasn't in the phone book. It was through word of mouth that she received all of her students. And so that's the woman that introduced me to the form. And I really believe, like, if not for Ethel, I would not be tap dancing. I'd still be a tap dancer, probably. Yes. But I would not be tap dancing. And so, like, it was just very... My life has been freakishly ordered because I continue to follow my passions. Within 3 years of me learning how to tap dance, Gregory Hines himself, my inspiration for the form, comes to Montreal. He's invited to the Montreal Jazz Festival. And he invites anybody that has tap shoes on stage. And so, you know, from like day one, Ethel said, "You never leave home without your tap shoes. You always have your tap shoes with you." But I'm still this shy kid, right? So I'm sitting down. Everybody's like walking up on stage. I'm sitting down. My mother, who's sitting next to me in the theater, says, "Hey, Travis, so I understand that you may have a little fear, but there are certain moments in your life, you realize this as you get older, certain moments in your life that if you let them pass by, you will regret it. This is one of those moments." And then she sat back and I said, "Ah!" So then I went up on stage, and I'm a tap dance nerd. So what that means is I was studying a lot of Gregory Hines's films and his work, and quite frankly, stealing his steps. And so I did one of his steps, and he stopped me midway. I was like, "What? What? How?" And then he let me go on, and then I did more, and then I did more, and then we did something together. And the CBC newscast, they were like filming the show. And they ran the story of, you know, young prodigy realizes his dream of dancing with his idol. And that went all over Canada. And the very next day, I received my first offer for money to tap dance on some kind of television show. I started working that very next day. So when I say like freakishly ordered, I may be uncomfortable at dinner parties, you know, with like straight people, when they say, you know, "Hey, what do you do?" "I'm a tap dancer." I may be like uncomfortable talking about it because it seems so ridiculous, but I mean it to the very core of my being. I am a tap dancer.
Wow, what a beautiful story, Travis. Early morning here, and you're inspiring me. Just your energy speaks volumes. On any social media, you don't even have to speak and we feel you. And I want to get into it because you became a tap dancer in your heart. You knew from that day that you watched it, even if you weren't a professional, you knew that day. And obviously the universe worked with you and you followed the right path. You learned from the best. You knew how old were you when you did that?
10.
When you watched that TV show, you were 10 years old.
Oh yeah, I was like nine. I was turning 10.
So you knew at 9, 10 years old in your heart, I'm a tap dancer. And then you obviously studied from the best. How did someone at 9, 10 years old understand, let me study the best and to become the best. It is a journey, right? To become who you really are meant to become and who you really want to see. And what age did you dance with Gregory Hines on stage?
I was 13.
So 13 3 years. Look at that.
Meticulous.
9, 10, you had a dream. You saw this vision. You learned from the best. 13, you're actually on stage dancing with someone that is your mentor, someone that you look up to. And here you are sharing the stories. It was all meant to be.
All meant to be. But I want to give a shout out because, you know, there's an author. His name is Malcolm Gladwell. He has this book called The Outliers or Outliers. You know about this book, The Untold Story of Success? It starts off with an amazing statistics. If you conduct a poll among all the NHL players, you'll find that most of their birthdays lie between January and June. There's very few hockey players that are born after June. Why? Because as children, the way the children's leagues are set up is if I started at 10, I'm born in August, but a 10-year-old born in August versus a 10-year-old born in January, there's a significant growth difference. And so there's an advantage that the January baby has over the August baby, or worse, the December baby. That's a whole year of difference. And so when I say like advantage, Montreal as a city is very culturally aware, sensitive. It supports the arts. Yes. So Ethel moved to Montreal in the 50s because of this. In the 50s, when Montreal was even more like booming as a city that, you know, where the nightclubs were a thing. Ethel moved at the age of 16 and started working in Montreal and just stayed because there's so much work. Montreal is like a cultural hub of Canada. And that's a very specific advantage that I had being born and raised there. Not to mention one of the biggest jazz festivals in the world that has the wherewithal to invite essentially a jazz musician. That's what we are as tap dancers. So they invite Gregory Hines. I don't know. It's freakishly ordered, but I feel very advantageous or very lucky that I was born where I was born, when I was born. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like being at the right time, the right place, and magic happens. You speak about magic at the beginning. So this is what your life and your career and your purpose is for. Like, you share the love of tap all over the world. You go on stage, you bring in these musicians because obviously that jazz feel is so important for you. Mm-hmm. So it's music, it's sound, everything is like you're in it and you're living an experience. Like, your show is living an experience. You come in and you're going to leave out of there feeling inspired, feeling good. Yeah. And this is what the world needs. And I know, being a studio owner, when there's a tap number on stage, for some reason, there's an automatic smile on every single public member. But what it is the energy, right? And then it's the sound, and it just builds in the body. And it's like, it's an explosion at the end, because obviously sometimes, you know, there's that fast rhythm going on and you're like, you know, you can't take it. It's so fun. So you growing up in this, if ever you feel sad or mad, I guess you just put on your tap shoes and you just, you know.
Actually, yeah. But there's like a
There's always a
by the way. Recently, a friend of mine, Allison Toffin, she put on the Toronto International Tap Dance Festival.
Yeah.
And I was in a bad, bad place then, like mentally just a bad place. I didn't want to show up, but I had a contract. So fine, I had to show up. And Allison and the Toffin Rhythm Initiative, actually, they put on a few different shows with international artists and local artists as well. The festival had classes, all kinds of things, and I didn't want to show up. I attempted to dye my beard blue as a way to be standoffish, because I was just not in a good place. Okay, so part of my contract was I had to be on this panel with a bunch of tap dancers, local and international, and the last question that Allison, who was also moderating, asked was like, you know, what's next for you? What's in your future? What's next for you in terms of the dance? And I told this story. I said, I was on the phone with this incredible singer. Her name's Divine Brown, phenomenal singer. And we were chopping it up and we were conspiring to see, like, you know, what's the next gig? What are we going to do next? Okay. That very same day, Derek Chauvin, the police officer that murdered George Floyd, was sentenced convicted of murdering George Floyd. I'm on the phone with Divine, and I burst out into tears. But it wasn't tears; I was sobbing, right, uncontrollably. And this mantra kept coming out of my mouth. I kept on saying, "This used to be fun. This used to be fun. This used to be fun." A lot of my work right now is about directly and indirectly challenging the system and using tap dance as a metaphor, as a playground for racial issues, for talking about racial issues. Because if you understand the history of the form, it starts in the Black community when drums were taken away because of a very specific rebellion in 1739. It was called the Stoner Rebellion. Africans on plantations would beat their drums as a signal to the next plantation that we're rebelling right now. And it was very effective. And so the year after, in 1740, they passed something called the Negro Act, which restricted the movement of these Africans. That's where you get the law that's passed, where newborns, it's illegal to teach them how to read or write, and they take away the drums. So what happens when the drums are taken away? Much like in Trinidad, that's how the steel pan is born, when their drums are taken away. When drums are taken away in the American context, that's where the rhythms were passed down corporeally, and buck dancing is born. Buck dancing turns into buck and wing, and buck and wing turns into tap dance. Not too long after that, after buck dancing is born, you had these entertainers that were on plantations and observing, and they started minstrel shows where they dressed up in blackface and pretended to be Africans. They would call Negroes, or a more derogatory term, and they would tap dance in these minstrel shows. And so a lot of tap dance now is inspired by minstrelsy. But if you that's public facing tap dance. But the tap dance that I'm currently investigating, I mean that because I don't know enough. When I read books, it's like nuances come out. In terms of how the form is practiced within the Black community itself. That's why during the Harlem Renaissance, you had this critical mass of, I choose to say, Africans in the United States, because they're not citizens, they can't vote. So you have a critical mass of these Africans that are moving from the South to the North, and they have like these different cultures all over the place. And the cities that they converge in, all these cultures are mixing. So you have a Kansas City, Chicago was a huge cultural shift. Harlem was a huge cultural shift. There's something called the Harlem Renaissance that occurs in the 1920s. And so when you think about what was happening, much like an easier example for people to understand in the contemporary realm is hip hop. Mm-hmm. So hip hop, if you're like a hip hop head, you know that there's like, four elements involved. There's like graffiti, breaking, or b-boying, b-girling, DJing, MCing.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
The four elements. So if you take that as like a foundation of what a culture is built off of, you know, visual art, poetry or writing in terms of MC, what music's musicians, DJ, and dance, this was happening in Harlem from completely different cultural context. And that's what jazz is. It's like there's a bunch of different things that go inside of it. Today, of course, because it's been codified, these institutions have siloed these different elements of jazz so that it's something different today. But when I say that I'm investigating it, the reason I'm so invested in jazz itself is because as a tap dancer, I'm aware that it was so... That's what the culture is.
I mean, there's so much to learn. Why do we tap? Why are we learning this? But it's so interesting when you know why you do what you do. Huey was clear at 9, 10 years old. And there's a level of education, that nerd fact that you bring up, you know, you love studying. And by studying and educating and, you know, knowing your history of why you do what you do, then you keep sharing. And this is This is what I call the love of anything you do. It's something that you learn from the deep of your soul, and then you share with the world.
The arc of the story is like what I was sharing at the International Tap Dance Festival is my next step is to find that joy again, because I've forgotten it. It's like, it's so right now, my work is so intensely linked to the pain of, you know, the racist undertones that are historically embedded in the form itself, that I'm trying to free myself from. I'm trying to find that joy again is where I'm at. In terms of what you said about like people just dancing, yo, I kind of feel that we're afraid of culture. Oh, we're afraid of diving into culture itself. Versus, you know, what's popular and what's available on TikTok. No, they're all linked to very specific, very rich cultural forms. And I don't know. I don't think it requires courage so much as curiosity. Where does this come from? Ooh, why? Ooh, why? And I promise it'll inform why you dance. I promise.
I agree, Travis. Thank you. I agree, because that energy needs to be felt. If you don't feel it, you're going to wake up one day later on and saying, what did I do? Am I happy with myself? Figure that out at the beginning. Why you started, why you win it.
Yeah.
Learn everything you need to learn about everything. That's why you inspire me. Now you're a tap dancer. You're on sets. You know, there's Happy Feet that everybody knows. Oh my God, by the way, I loved Happy Feet. I watched it on repeat with my kids. And I did not know that you were part of that, you know.
So. Oh, I was a part of the video game of Happy Feet.
Happy Feet.
But the genius that you were hearing was Savion Glover. Golly, that was bananas. Yeah,
that was
in the actual film, Savion Glover.
And that's when I told my son you were going to become a tap dancer. And you know what? He's a great tap dancer, not at your level. Sweet. But he has rhythm, and that's another thing, right?
Yeah.
Tap is all about your sound, your rhythm, understanding it. And we do have an amazing teacher here, which you know, Benny Dreyer. You know, he keeps sharing his love for tap. And yeah, I remember watching that. I think he was 2 years old or three at the time. And I'm like, oh boy, you're tapping. You definitely have to tap. Because it's such a happy feeling. And I want people to always feel happy. When you decided to create your own tour.
Sorry, Tap Love Tour. Yeah.
Tap Love Tour. And you brought in these musicians and you're touring the world. Now, how does that make you feel? Because the day you said, no, I need to step it up and do something different. Like, how did you come up with it? How did you create this?
There was a requirement in my family. Yeah, you can do whatever you want. You could tap dance. You have to get a degree first. Okay, so fine. So I followed my brother. My brother went into international business. So I went into international business. And it was 4 years. It was wonderful. Concordia was very lovely. I learned like one thing. I learned one thing, but it was very valuable. It was an entrepreneurial class. When you're selling a product, you have to identify four things to determine if it's worth selling. Is the product valuable? Is it rare? Is it costly to imitate? And are you organized to exploit it? So those four questions apply 100% to tap dance, which means that while I was in school, I was like, oh, nobody's looking for a tap dance. Nobody's looking for tap dancers. So I literally have to create the market, the need. I have to become organized to exploit the opportunity because, yes, it is rare. It is costly to imitate. It's taken me decades to be sort of happy with what I'm doing, you know what I mean? But it's taken a very long time. It is valuable. So I just have to become organized to exploit it. And that's what the Tap Love Tour is. Okay. It's basically a venture with myself and my wife, Tanya, who's also an Ethelbruno alumni. Preach!
What a perfect couple. A perfect couple to tap dance. And now the kids will tap dance too, of course.
Yes, absolutely. So it's like it's an umbrella company for anything that we want to do. And the latest thing that we're doing is we're creating a documentary feature about an indigenous tap dancer named Jonathan Morin, one of the best in the country. Yeah. We're using the cultural form of tap dance to explore Jonathan's journey, his quest to discover his own indigenous heritage through the forum. We're excited about it and onward and upward.
That's amazing. How did you go about creating your show?
Oh, interesting. So, wow, that's a long story. Oh! Okay, wait.
I love Travis. He has so much to share. He's just a brilliant human.
A lot to share. a lot to share. Well, so it's taken me a long time to create the concert, but I'm gonna put that to the side right over here because okay. That's more I feel like that's more accessible. I hooked up or collaborated with a dancer named Brandy Leary in 2017. She is the director of Anundam Dance Theater. And for the past, since 2017 till now, we've been working on a show called Ephemeral Artifacts. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to debut it in 2020, but of course we know what happened. But instead of pivoting, we went in deeper and deeper and deeper. We got to finally perform the show in May at the Mai in Montreal. We went on to Dusseldorf, Germany, and then Liège. I'm forgetting a place, Nottingham in the UK, and we're going to Calgary very shortly. I say that to say that show, it took 5 years to create, but it's a culmination of 20 something years of experience, not to mention the podcast that I host. We're 100 plus episodes in, but it's there's a lot that went into that show that I'm going to use the word contemporary tap dance show. Mm-hmm. I say that because I got an email very recently from, I probably shouldn't talk about this, but I think it's important. I'm sorry, whoever I'm upsetting. Okay. So I got an email from Tangent. They're curating like artists in residence. They're trying to help young choreographers do their thing. And they asked me, hey, saw your show, saw Ephemeral Artifacts, and wondering, can you give us names of young tap dance choreographers that are exploring questions, that are engaging the form in a similar way that you did in Ephemeral Artifacts?
Oh boy, that's the stare. He's staring me down, guys. Okay, what's happening?
I immediately phoned my wife, phoned a couple of my colleagues, and we couldn't think of any.
There is
no. At least in Montreal. I had to like go out a little bit further for that. I don't know if that's going to work for them, that maybe their funding is specific to artists in Montreal. But I say that to say that the form is so... There's so much potential within the form, mm-hmm. and the legacy, excuse me, I'm going to go here, the legacy of minstrelsy, mm-hmm. which leads to, show business, vaudeville, which leads to Broadway. Mm-hmm. The tap dance is seen in the public zeitgeist as something very limited to, a stage with a smile and rhythms. But there's so much to explore if you decide to learn a bit more about it, learn about what drives it culturally, learn about the history of it. And all of a sudden, you have access to so much things that could be said through tap dance that this curator said they had never seen before. They didn't even know about the form before seeing the show. And I'm not, I promise you, if you know anything about me, I am not tooting my horn.
No.
I'm saying that there's so much work to be done.
Yeah.
And it's kind of daunting to me at a lot of the times. So let me calm down.
Because we don't have the Ethel Brunos here anymore and the Travis Knights. And we don't have anybody keep sharing. I truly believe in good mentoring. And when you're lucky
yes.
to have a great mentor that believes in you and that wants to rise you up, because it's all about overnight fame. Mm. It's just no one is there for the long run. Like, I mean, they can do this for a year or two, but after that, I mean, they're going to get bored. Instead of you, after 30 years of career, you're still, you still think that you're not where you're supposed to be because you're learning something.
Not at all.
The day.
Right.
An artiste comes from the heart. It's like you were born to do this compared to I am just a tap dancer. You're an artist. You want to get involved. You investigate. You invest yourself every day. So that's a difference, I believe, in what we're having now, the problem with the community of the next generation. No one wants to dive deep like you do. It's like it's fast food.
It is fast food. And I don't know. I think they would if they just knew that it was out there. There's like a Ephemeral Artifacts, my one person show that I just talked about, which is ridiculous because it took so many people to help make that show. We've been working on it since 2017. I'm not kidding. It took 5 years. And every single time I do it, I learned something new. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine what would happen if I had the opportunity to do it 8 times a week.
Wow. Like,
What? Come on. And so really what I'm excited for, I have shows booked until November 20th and like little sprinkles of gigs here and there. I'm taking time off. I'm like batting away anything that's not already booked because right. I need to be by myself in my own element in my studio. I need to be working specifically on this documentary film. I just need to sit for a moment and let things stew, you know, to improve the flavor, so to speak. There's a lot of questions that I have that I can't answer unless I'm quiet.
You really go deep. And in those quiet moments, in those silence, that's where you find your answers. Mm-hmm. And this is how you evolve into the other step. This is what I love about the whole journey of being an artist, because if you're not out there to learn more about yourself and what you can do and what you can share, mm-hmm. then I question myself sometimes going, so why are you doing it for? You know, the whys that we ask ourselves. So you are at that period, Travis, where you've made change, you've transformed. Wherever you go, people know you very well. So where can we find you next?
I'm working at the Soul Pepper Theater Company, doing a show called The Golden Record. It's going to be fantastic. It is fantastic. We already started. Audiences, it's so nice to dance in front of audiences again. You have no idea. It's fantastic. But I promise, you know, should I survive long enough, I will be around. You will see me. Keep up with me at travisknights.com. Or on the socials, Instagram specifically. What else? Oh, I do want to say one thing.
Yes, please.
If I may. I was naive. I still am naive. But this is a less naive person talking to whoever's listening. It is so important to do your research. You can do the things that you think that you have a passion for, that you imagine. You know, the thing about being a human, the magic of being a human is if you realize and understand your own personal agency, then you can literally dream something and then manifest it. If we're lucky enough to live in, what is it, a G20 country, Canada is like one of these countries that has very good funding.
Yeah.
On a good political year. Yeah. Very good funding for the arts. It is out there. Do your research, reach out to mentors to understand how to apply for these grants. And when you're speaking to people, especially if you're public facing and you're an artist, when you're speaking to people, understand that they can become like one of your patrons in the jazz realm. At the height of jazz during the bebop era, there was I believe she was a countess or a duchess or something. Her name was Panonica de Cordiswater. She single-handedly funded an entire community of jazz musicians during the 1940s into the 50s. It's like the money is out there. The support is out there. The miracles are out there. But do you believe in yourself? That's the question. Do you believe in yourself? If you do, then walk like it, talk like it, and let's change the world together, because there's a lot of work to do. All right.
Travis, you are brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing all this information. Wherever you are, find yourself a mentor, find yourself classes, do
important.
The research, the preparation. If you really believe in yourself, like Travis said, go out
That's
there.
It's hard too. It's hard to do.
It
it's
is
hard to do, but worth it. Take the time.
It is possible. Yeah. It is possible. Yes. And that is all about your entourage. I always say surround yourself with really amazing people and find them. If you're not around people that lift you up, go find them. There are everywhere.
Exactly.
They're everywhere. I know I own a studio. I created this for myself and for everybody that comes in. And I see the magic that happens and I see what's getting put out there. And for me, the importance is always a foundation. So remember, whatever you do on stage or on set or anywhere you are, connect to yourself. Know why you are doing what you're doing. Find out more about it. If you don't know enough about it, go out there. There are people that can teach you, just like Travis. Travis, for tap dance classes, what would you recommend?
In Montreal specifically, Ethel's granddaughter is teaching. Her name's Majiza Phillips. And also Tisha Llewellyn is another granddaughter of Ethel is teaching. So, you know, listen. I'm a devotee of Ethel Bruno, so that's who I'm gonna always big up the ecosystem of the form is so, of any form is so important. You know, I'm thinking about in tap dance, there's a kind of like a cool club that you want to be involved in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But guess what? Not everybody's a performing artist. Not everybody's a teacher.
No.
Not everybody's a producer, but we need those. We need producers. We need teachers. We need performing artists. We need enthusiasts. We need funders. And so, and these are all tap dancers. They can be tap dancers, but I feel like, yeah, the ecosystem is something that needs to be discussed. I believe that within tap dance itself, we're missing a very key element, which is critical discourse. That is not a thing.
You've learned about yourself over the years, Travis.
I'm still learning. I'm very much confused these days.
Are you happy?
I'm so Ephemeral Artifact, for example. The first time we did like an excerpt, it was for like Black History Month in Toronto, Harbourfront, a bunch of Black people in the audience. I come out on stage. I start to tap dance. Whoa, what the, you know, because it's so rare. Who sees tap dance? Whoa. Okay, so then a part of the show is I have this like MIDI pad and that's triggered with different things. And I invited the voice of the ancestor, James Baldwin, into the room. Boom. And as soon as I did that, the room shifted.
Oh.
Because, you know, James Baldwin as a civil rights figure, as an author, gave voice to the Black condition, you know? And so when he speaks, the crowd just like, the energy changed. And so I cut up this a few speeches, just in terms of sound bites, that was toward the end. It was healing for the Black audience, and it was freeing for the Black audience. So by the time I hit that last button, that last post, that last little audio track, and I did my last tap step, the audience, they were on their feet. They were, feel the energy just like exploding in the room. In Dusseldorf, Germany, I performed Ephemeral Artifacts at a tap dance festival. Talk about a lack of critical discourse. Okay. At a tap dance festival where I was the, on Tap Dance Day, which is May 25th, where we celebrate the birth of the late great Bilbo Jangles Robinson. I was performing at a venue where I was the only Black person in the room with a bunch of tap dancers and their guests sitting down watching the show. In that show, a lot of the audio that I was pressing was pulled directly from my podcast, where I have critical discourse with a bunch of dancers and a bunch of people that are adjacent to the form. You had Dr. Barry Harris, who's this amazing jazz pianist, talk about the form. Montsell Durden, who's this incredible scholar, talk about the form. A bunch of different people. But it was very, very challenging if you're not doing any kind of work to acknowledge where the form comes from, culturally. So in that space, I had given so much, I had exposed so much of myself that at the end of the performance, I felt naked and I refused to come out to see the audience. I felt it was an extractive experience for me.
Empty.
So, yes, yes. And so when I say confusion, is I'm very much a Star Trek guy. Like I believe in the ethic of Star Trek. Where a bunch of different peoples, species get together to boldly go where no one has gone before, keep pushing together. But in that space in Dusseldorf, that's something that I never want to experience again. I don't want to experience being the only one. I don't want to experience putting myself vulnerably, culturally vulnerably out there and feel like I wasn't heard or they're not able to listen to it or something like that. It's just not pleasant for me. So even though I'm speaking to a lot of different presenters about ephemeral artifacts right now to book up dates, what's important to me in discussing with these presenters is, hey, I know you have a mandate because of the George Floyd revolution. I know you have a mandate for equity, diversity, and inclusion. That's great. And that's great that you're hiring a bunch of different peoples to be on your stages. But what's important to me is the audience. You have to curate your audience as well. And I just feel completely out of sorts when I'm the only Black person in the room. It's something that I'm struggling with. I'm confused by it. It is a struggle.
It's important to speak about it. And thank you for sharing and being honest, because I could just imagine how it felt, feeling empty, giving your all, and then at the end going, that's a lack of education, though, from the public side. They have no idea. They don't know, right? So they don't.
Among the tap dancers in Dusseldorf, and the director of the show, Brandy Leary, was in the audience, and she could feel it. She could feel the recoiling. She could feel the tension in the room. The day before, on actual tap dance day, the director, who's not a tap dancer, by the way, very important to work with people that are not of your form. That's essential. But I've been speaking about it, about erasure, about appropriation, and in this space, the day before on tap dance day, she witnessed it herself. Her jaw dropped. She said, I can't believe it's happening. It's in my face right now, the erasure of these masters of the form. Anyways, it's a very tricky time. It's an important time.
Yes.
And I know on all sides, there's like an impulse to not say what's in your heart to say.
Right.
Out of a risk of, you know, offending, out of a risk of being canceled. That's a very real thing, sure. But you know, the older you get, especially the older you get, that it's at those times that it's the most important to say what's in your heart. And if you're wrong, then be wrong and learn and do better. That's all. That's all we can do. I remember, even though it seems like it, I remember that I'm human and I am flawed and I'm trying. And I remember that about you as well. So hopefully we can all have goodwill with each other to...
Beautifully said, though, Travis, but it happened. There's a reason it happens. I do believe when things like that happen is to remember that feeling. And what did that feeling do for you not to go back to there? But next time you'll understand the room, you'll feel the vibe. And maybe there is an exchange that can happen, some sort of exchange, because there's a reason why you were meant to go there to feel that. There's a reason. Yeah. Understand it. And what are you going to do about it? Because obviously... Yeah. You have the upper hand because you're an artist. You want people to feel and connect to this energy, to this art form, to this history, to this culture. There's so much good that you're sharing. And other people are like, there's too much. So we don't know what they're feeling. So this is why someone like you with your, I'll call it nerd brain, with your
passion,
your passion. And the reason why you are here is to maybe try to shift that energy. And I think you do have the power to shift that energy. So when I'm listening to you, I just have that feeling inside going, he was meant to be on that stage. He was meant to feel that. What is he going to do with it for next time? How are we going to educate? How are we going to push through? How are we going to move together? And how are you going to change the world because of that moment? And something inside happened to you. And you said, I don't want to feel it again. But imagine that the universe might make you feel it again. So be ready for that moment. Because that's how
Yes. Yeah.
We're in a school of life. This is it. This is your classroom. Facts. And those were your students. So maybe not in the tap way students, you're not teaching them how to tap, but there is something that they need to learn. And if you could be the voice, not only the tap dancer, but that voice, which I know you use your voice from the podcast, but there's something that's going to shift. And you, my dear friend, are the one that's going to make it happen.
I can run with that. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Travis, you're extraordinary. Literally, I appreciate the work ethic. The work behind what we see on stage, because I've seen you on stage and I did come to the show in Montreal when you tapped. And and I will keep coming to your shows because I love you. I love the energy. I love tap.
Thank you. Yes.
I love how the room feels. And you were meant to do a lot and a lot more. And as you know, in your heart, you're still discovering so many things about yourself and the tap. So yeah. I can't wait to see you grow old in this.
Yeah. I hope, you know, life is exhausting, but I keep on saying, should I survive long enough? Should I survive long enough? All of the people that I admire in tap dance, the reason I started, they're all over 50. All of them, like, yo, I'm excited for it. You know,
Take
care of my body.
Yeah. Congratulations. Wish you all the best. I appreciate you. I appreciate all the work. And thank you for spreading tap love all over the world. Thank you.
Appreciate it. To be continued.
Always.